Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day brought to you by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts.
Greg is in Queens. What's up, Greg?
Hey, good morning, guys. Three quick points. Number one, where would the Mets be without Pete Alonso this year that David Stearns did not want to sign? Number two, the Phillies will sweep the Mets the next two games, and you guys are going to have a lot to talk about.
Well, they can't sweep them the next two games.
Why not?
It's a four-game series.
Okay, you sweep them the next four.
They already got one.
Well, I'm just saying, I think the Phillies are going to just wipe them out in this series. And number three, David Stearns. What has he done for this club since he's been here? He didn't want to sign Alonso. He didn't get involved with Juan Soto. Look at the trade deadline. And I bring up this analogy. And I don't want to talk about the Yankees, but weeks ago, everybody's talking about Boone and Cashman, and nobody's talking about David Stearns. What's going on here?
Well, there you have it. Call of the Day. We talked a lot of Mets so far. In case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. I do want to mention Aaron Boone for a second here, BT. He's on with Talking Yanks podcast in his weekly spot, yep. And they were pressing him pretty good on Volpe and the idea of having him sit more. And Boone did not defiantly shoot that down, as you could tell, because Kyle Beer isn't getting more playing time. Mm-hmm. But the way that I took it is that he said flat out that he expects Kyle Beer to get a start in this series, maybe even next series. I think
at short or in the outfield.
No, at short.
Okay, go ahead.
That's the way
that
they
played some outfield.
Yeah, no, because they were talking about Volpe. He said he liked, like, the guys are suggesting that they sit Volpe for a while and have Kyle Beer take over at short, which might be inevitable in the postseason anyway, and Boone saying, well, he likes Caballero's versatility off the bench, doesn't need to see him out there for a prolonged stretch, he knows he can handle it. I do think, and the guys even brought this example up, Jake and John Boy, talking about how with IKF, remember, shoved down our throat, and then all of a sudden he wasn't in the postseason. I think that's what's going to happen here. I mean, to me, the writing's on the wall. It's clear as day. The Yankees aren't stupid. They went as long as they could, giving Volpe every chance that they possibly could.
Yeah.
To a point where we're all like, dude, what the hell's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they should have acknowledged it earlier, wouldn't got this loud or this bad. There's no way Volpe could stand at shortstop in the postseason.
I don't disagree. He's got a little more runway. You know, if he plays tonight and he has a good game, probably run him back out there tomorrow. If he could get a little hot, that could change things a little bit.
Don't you think the lineup's already set, like a week out?
No, not for a week. Oh, come on. You're an ass.
No, I'm saying, you know, Booty.
No way.
You know, Booty, he's probably got, like he said to the guys, like, yeah, you know, he'll probably get a start this series and next series. In my mind, I'm thinking, dude, who are you fooling? You've already got the lineup scheduled out the rest of the season here.
Well, we did see the Yankees bench him after he had a three-hit night.
That's what I'm saying.
Which kind of, you know, but no, I don't think it's out for a month, for a week or so. I do think that there's obviously some future planning based on the immediacy of the pitching matchups, lefty-righty split, stuff like that. But I mean, I think it's fluid, man. I think it's as simple as if Volpe wakes up and starts playing, he plays. If he doesn't, he sits.
All right, Dave is calling from Smithtown about the Mets. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Sal. Listen, as a Mets fan, brain on October, baby. Phillies, Dodgers, Blue Jays, and Red Sox after they beat the Yankees. I'm ready for it. But listen, Sal, I know a lot of calls have been giving you hell about your positivity, but let me say this. And look, if you struggle all year and you get in, whatever happens, happens. I can deal with that. And it's not about, you know, the Mets not winning the World Series in 40 years. But here's the thing that ticks me off as a fan. You know, you go back to 3 years ago. The Jets are 7-4. They spit the bit. What was the rest of the games? The Rangers win a President's Trophy, get bowed out early, miss the playoffs the next year. The Mets have a big division lead like they had in 07, fall apart. That's the thing that's really frustrating to me as a sports fan. I right now I'm excited, but I just don't understand why these mental breakdowns happen. I just want your opinion on that.
Thank you for the call, Dave. I don't know if it's a mental break. First of all, you guys are the ones who are having the mental breakdown. The Mets are still in the playoffs. They were in the playoffs the whole year. And you're calling and worried about it not happening. That's the mental breakdown. They either just don't have the right guys together. They don't have good enough players. Like, We'll find out at the end result right now. And this is what's frustrating to me, where it's like, all of a sudden, can you imagine I'm being painted as the picture of positivity? No, I'm being realistic. They are in the playoffs. They have maintained a playoff spot the entire year. So how is that being positive? We'll find out sooner than later about what this team's really made of. And then we can assess and judge them.
Okay, so a lot of this is piecing things together, admittedly. Opinions mostly derived from what we've seen so far that lead us to another opinion on what the Mets will do the rest of the year. But the one thing, let me just point out a baseball thing, which is why I'm a little worried for the Mets here. Because, now I said it, but we all said it. You got to get a stick. I remember saying, like, in May, like, dude, center fielder, it's just, you need a center fielder. They got one. He's not good. So the issue that they had at the lower third of their batting order, we thought it was addressed to an extent with Mullins, but it has not been. And that was a big problem that I saw and talked about in real time that I thought they addressed enough where it was. And then Vientos was starting to hit. I'm like, okay, here we go.
Alvarez,
you know, up
Mauricio.
And down. Although that at bat yesterday was awful, but for sure.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Those guys, they either have it or they don't. Like,
yeah.
Vientos has been inconsistent. Alvarez gave an at-bat last night that looked like he belonged back in the minor leagues.
I think it was the worst at-bat I've seen this year. He missed three pitches by a combined 9 feet. He was just guessing.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we've had missives over the years here at The Fan, as we know. We now have tweets.
What do we got? King Cohen?
Nope.
Oh,
not your boy.
Figured I'd be on top of that one.
Well, he's usually quiet when the Mets aren't playing well, as we know, so he hasn't said much lately. Russell Wilson has dropped a little tweet here.
Oh, God.
It's my reaction as well.
Russell Wilson.
It's not incredibly wordy. It's a little vague in terms of the quarterback room. Okay. I will let you guess.
Well,
it's
It's
only two words.
I was going to say, let's get it. Something corny like
something
that.
Something corny based on, it's Hawks, go Hawks, and all the other cheeseball things he did in Seattle. Close, basically depicting the same mindset. Would you like me to tell you what he tweeted 42 minutes ago? Two words, mentally tough, period. Oh, Russ, listen, Russ. Giant fans aren't going to let this fly for too long, man. I say this, I think Russ is a real great competitor, and I think he's, even though corny, a great guy, like a good, a well-purposed person, I should say. Like, I think he tries to do the right thing, I really do. But he needs to understand the venom that the Giant fan has had for a long, long time. You're not one of us. You weren't drafted by the Giants. You weren't developed by the Giants. Nobody wants to see your corny tweets. Go about your job, as I know you will, because I know he's a hard worker. Get your team in the end zone or take a seat and be quiet. These tweets aren't going to fly for much longer.
Now, this is not like the reason why the Giants sucked Sunday was not because of Russell Wilson. All right. Now, he might have been a part of that, whatever you meant.
He definitely was.
Certainly past his prime. Yeah. I mean, he's not, to me, the focal point. This is, they've rotated multiple quarterbacks. The offense can't score touchdowns. So to me, it's more about the head coach and the overall scheme and all that stuff. But that aside, is someone, in fact, mentally tough if they feel the need to tweet out that they are mentally tough? Because I would counter the other way. I would say somebody who is, in fact, mentally tough does not feel the need to go to social media to let everybody else know that they're mentally tough.
It's a unique way of looking at it. But that, to be fair, anytime that whether you or I, and we haven't had many reasons to clap back at anybody on social media, but then that would imply if we or when we've clapped back in the past that it, like, the intention was not necessarily to clap back, that it could have been something else. Like, that's a slippery
slope. But
clapping
back is a reason.
Well, maybe he's clapping back at the haters.
Maybe
he's basically saying, hey, listen, maybe he flipped on the fan yesterday for a minute, or maybe he seems like the kind of guy who searches his mentions and sees what's being written about him on X. Maybe that's his way of saying, all right, I see what you're saying, and I'm going to tell you that I am mentally tough, and I'm going to go out and back it up on Sunday against Dallas and do it.
But I don't think this is a certain, I don't think this is the situation where it's about the starting quarterback not being good enough. Russell Wilson's barely been here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue here is that everybody wants to see Jackson Dart. It has nothing to do with Russell Wilson. It could be anybody. It could be Jameis Winston. It could have been Aaron Rodgers. It could be anybody. I think it's more about Jackson Dart in this spot as opposed to Daniel Jones stinks. Let's get Tommy DeVito in or the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
The starter hasn't even... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
this is more about the excitement of Jackson Dart and not about the futility or failures of Russell Wilson, who's been here for a game.
I think for the most part, I agree with you. I think that you're right, but I also think that there was a different... I don't want to overstate this. A little bit of a different energy with Russell Wilson coming in because he's had more success than Jones. He can throw. He can still throw a deep ball. Like the guy that I saw playing on Sunday, he's just chucking and ducking. Like
he was under duress the whole game.
I know. I get it. Yeah. I'm not dumping this at his doorstep. The play calling was unimaginative and awful. Sometimes they overthought it, like we talked about with Baldy, and most times they didn't think at all. They couldn't run. They couldn't stop the run. The Giants looked awful. We know this. I'm not saying it was Russell Wilson's fault entirely, but the thought is that, you know, a younger, more dynamic athlete whose head is up rather than Russ, whose eyes are down because he's afraid to get hit, or not afraid, but you know what I mean, doesn't want to get hit, and he anticipates getting hit. I just think that there was a little, for me, I thought that Russell Wilson would have a fairly decent first month or so, 6-7 games to the season, where, you know, I'll give you a touchdown pick ratio, 7 games, maybe 12 touchdowns, 5 picks, kind of protect the ball, just get in the end zone enough to keep his job and look like a representative quarterback. So that's where I was with that. But yes, it's mostly about Dart, if not entirely, for many people.
We both agreed Russell Wilson should start week 2, stick to the plan. What would be your breaking point where you say, okay, definitively, you got to go with Jackson Dart?
You know, I hate to be so influenced, but I am of the mindset that when people who know more than me speak, I'm going to listen to them. Now, doesn't mean I'm going to automatically change my opinion, but I might hear. I might be now of the mindset, because everybody tells me that's been around him, you know, how resilient and how intelligent Jackson Dart really is, and it doesn't seem as risky to throw him out there soon. I'm going to say that I'm okay with him playing half number 2 against Dallas if Russ ain't getting it done. However, I will also add this, despite the fact making fun of his tweets and all this stuff, I think that Russ is actually going to score a couple of touchdowns, and the Giants will be, I don't know if they'll win, they'll look functional offensively. Dallas' defense stinks.
I think 0-4. I'm giving Russ this game. I'm giving Russ week 3 against the Chiefs. And I would still probably give Russ, although, you know, me, I was saying, hey, come on, you can't throw the kid to the wolves. And the more you hear it from Baldy, I'm with you. That it's not going to be as late as I initially thought. I didn't think we'd see him to maybe the bye week or week 11 or something like that. Week 11 at home.
Yep.
I would say if the Giants start 0-4, so it's not just weeks, it's also their start. That's what I'm getting into.
Yeah, no, I got you.
0-4, that to me would be like, okay, it's time to fire the salvo of going with Jackson Dart in New Orleans. The problem with that is that you get the Eagles, yep, and then at Denver, and then at Philadelphia right behind it. Like, That's a tough stretch with 3 good defenses, Eagles twice and the Broncos there after the Saints game. But if you think he's ready, throw him to the wolves. And if you're 0-4, if that's it, season's toast at 0-4, probably going to be toast at 0-2 or 0-3, whatever. But
it's probably toast now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. But if you think they're going to do well in Dallas,
I think the offense is going to score. I don't know if they'll win. I think it's going to be a close, competitive, fun game.
I'm going to stay the course and stick to the plan. But if they went 0-4, to me, that would be okay. It's Jackson Dart time.
Yeah, I mean, we harped on the schedule all year, and that's got to be the roadmap to at least get a sense of when we think he should play here. And I initially said week 10 at the Bears seemed like a logical spot. I also, early during the summer or midway through the summer, did initially kick the tires week 5 in New Orleans. But, like, you couldn't have a couple layups. Like, you couldn't play Carolina or the Browns or the Dolphins, who seem like they're imploding. Like, come on, this schedule stinks.
Sonny calling from Malvern. What's up, Sonny?
Sonny.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
What's happening, buddy?
Good. Good, BT, I'm with you. Listen, I'm not a football expert. I'm not a quarterback whisperer, although I know a lot about football. I know a damn lot about Giant football. But I go according to the experts, right? Boldinger, Bill Sims, all these guys who know about quarterbacks. And if they say he's ready, and if they say to put him in ASAP, that's what I go according to. And to all these people who say you can't put him in behind that offensive line until the offensive line is ready, guys, when is the offensive line going to be ready? They
Never.
Haven't had an offensive line that right. Dating back to 2013, even the year in the playoffs against Green Bay, they put play They paid $200 million for the defense. They screwed Eli Manning his last 5 years of his career, Daniel Jones, and now this year. So we have to wait for that offensive line to be ready. And let me tell you something. Andrew Thomas, from what it sounds like, he may not be ready all year. He may not be 100% all year.
But, Sonny, so here's the problem.
If we're waiting for that offensive line to be ready, we're going to be growing old, guys.
Understood. I said the same exact thing yesterday, and thanks for the call.
Thanks, bud.
Here's the problem with that. It's not just about, well, you're waiting for the offensive line to be ready. It's about setting the quarterback up to succeed. So if you throw a young quarterback, or any quarterback, but a young quarterback to the Wolves and put him on a team that's not ready because their offensive line isn't very good, you're asking for trouble. It doesn't mean that his career is going to be derailed and he's toast automatically. It does mean that maybe they're not doing the best thing to put him in a position to succeed. And all due respect to the greats who know the game far better than I ever could, whether it's Phil Simms or Carl Banks or Brian Boulding or whoever, they're not always right either.
I agree.
So just because, and I do respect Boldy's opinion, obviously, when he said it last week, I was like, whoa. Put it on our radar. Like, I'm thinking week 11, bye week. He's saying week 5.
Yeah.
And then you see the week 1 performance, and I'm thinking, holy crap. Like, and obviously it's getting louder and louder, the calls for Jackson Dart. Doesn't mean that they're right, though. And remember, a lot of times it is the situation that these quarterbacks are put in. Josh Allen, for example. If the Giants drafted Josh Allen instead of Saquon Barkley, do you think he would be in the same spot he is in his career now than he is with the Buffalo Bills?
No, I don't. But I don't think he'd be broken, but he wouldn't be a perennial MVP candidate, you know, winning 12, 13 games, knocking on the door of the Super Bowl. No, they, because there was nothing around him.
Pat Mahomes with the Jets as opposed to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. My answer is pretty much the same here. I think if Shane could get one do-over, well, aside from drafting, like, Evan Neal.
Well, that would be the one.
That would be the massive one. And this is not a knock on the player because he's damn good, but it's the wrong resource devoted to the wrong side of the ball at the wrong time. This is not dissing Burns. This is pointing out there were so many other obvious holes up front with the draft equity, with the money that you gave Burns. Like, to ignore that. I tweeted this morning, I can't prove this. Now, you could say the Jets quarterback room and shut me up very fast, and it's actually funny, and some people did tweet that. But I was just asking aloud, can anybody name the group of, whether it's an offensive line or a backcourt or a bullpen or a starting rotation, a group, like a position player, like a group of position players for any of our teams, power play, you know, penalty kill for the Rangers, that has been so bad for so long, like the Giants offensive line. Dude, we're talking almost 20 years. They can't fix this thing.
Yeah, really, since Coughlin. 20. Since Coughlin left, and maybe right at the end of Coughlin. That was Gettleman's first thing. He's going to get the hog molly.
It's ridiculous.
Mollies. Hector's in Washington Heights. What's up, Heck?
What's up, guys? I got to be honest, man. I'm sick to my stomach. I've been sick to my stomach since last night watching this team. I'm sick to my stomach watching my buddy Sal, who I love, but you're making me sick listening to you this morning with this positivity, and I don't know where you gain this confidence from.
That's from time.
And now I'm even more sick. I'm even more sick having to listen to Russell Wilson tweets. And all. Like, I don't even want to watch this guy play. Let me tell you guys something. The Knicks better bring it this year, because my other two teams, they really make me sick. And Sal, please, Sal. Let's have a conversation here. What is there to be so confident about when you watch this team every day, besides the fact that, yes, I'll tell you, I'll give it to you, we'll make the playoffs, and if we face the Phillies four times, four series, we'll beat them all four series. But that's not
I don't even know about that. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying if the Mets played the Phillies in the postseason that they'd beat them. All I'm saying is that they have had the Phillies number. Doesn't mean that they're going to beat the Phillies again. What I'm saying is you make it like it's the old days with the Mets. I'm saying that it's...
No, forget about the old days.
Well, no, you can't. They've been as bad as they could be, right? Everybody's saying how inconsistent, how down of a year, and they're still in the playoffs. That, to
me
they're
question,
better
buddy.
Than the Reds. They're better than the Giants. The Padres...
Are they really?
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are.
Now, when you watch this team every night, do you come away with more answers or questions? Because I come away with more questions every night.
Me too.
I come away with questions about the manager whom we love. But is he really, does he really have a handle for this team this season? Like BT was saying, last year pitched all the right buttons. This year pushes almost all the wrong buttons. Now, a lot of times it's the players not executing. But who's going to execute? You want to talk about Edwin Diaz? Are you really confident in Edwin Diaz? And besides Edwin Diaz, who gives you confidence? Who gives you confidence? Are you confident in this offense? Are we ever going to come back in the game, late in the game? So give me the answers. Give me the reasons. I want to believe.
I gave you the reasons before, and thank you for the call. If you're not confident in Edwin Diaz, I don't know what to tell you. There has been no bigger critic of Edwin Diaz than me, dating back to 2019. None. Not a single person has been more of a critic of Edwin Diaz than me. If you don't believe in it,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Edwin Diaz at this point, I don't know what to tell you. Doesn't mean that he's perfect. Obviously, all relievers get beat at times. He's gotten the job done the majority of the time. If you're worried about him, you're barking up the wrong tree. There are a litany of other reasons. I'm confident in Juan Soto. That's another one. I'm confident that the fact that the Mets have a three-game lead, four if you factor in the tiebreaker, over the Giants for the final playoff spot. So I'm confident they're going to make the playoffs. I'm confident in Nolan McClain. I'm confident in Lindor and Alonso come postseason. I'm confident in Tyler Rogers and Brooks Raley in the back end of that bullpen, along with Edwin Diaz. So does it mean that it's going to work out? Who the hell knows? I have no idea. But I'm confident with, to me, legitimate reason. I'm also confident that nobody else in baseball, to me, looks unbeatable at this particular point.
So one thing, I've said this for a few situations, and I know we got a break here, where the... It makes me uncomfortable when we point to, even though you just pointed to things that the Mets do well, you ran through about five or six things. Like, sometimes when we're not sure about a situation, we're like, well, this team doesn't have this, or the league is missing this. Like, the Yankees, the American League is weak, so they can... I prefer to look to more tangible reasons for the team to elevate them to a certain point rather than what's not around them. And too much this year, too many components of the Mets have been substandard. That doesn't mean it can't click, and it doesn't mean that Soto can't get on a heater again, which he probably will. Lindor hit a couple of clutch bombs. Pete do the same. Bullpen lock it down. Young kids come out throwing smoke and get some wins. Of course that could happen. But to me, it's just me, although I think Hector agrees, to me there seems more wrong with the Mets when they than right. When they change that, that's when I'll change how I feel about the Mets.
Right, but all I'm saying is you're not watching the other teams every night either. Because if you did that...
I agree with that. But I do think the Padres have a little bit more talent. I do think the Phillies have been more consistent. The Brewers have definitely been more consistent. The Dodgers have championship DNA, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they get bored with the regular season. So, you know, I mean, it's a little bit in between, a little bit of everything there.
Padres are coming off a stretch where they've been they've won three in a row here. Outside of that, and two of them were against the Rockies.
No.
Outside of that, dude, they got swept by the Orioles. At home.
The Orioles are playing very good baseball lately.
They lost two out of three to the Twins. They have been getting beat left and right.
How many wins do they have? I don't have it in front of me. Hold on.
Give me a second. I'll pull it up right here. I just had it.
All right. So I got it too. So the Padres have 79.
Yeah.
And the Mets have 76. Yeah. As you point out all the things the Padres are doing wrong, they got three more wins than the Mets.
Right.
Who also lost three or four to the to the Marlins.
Yeah. Right.
It's the same script here. Except the Padres have three more wins.
Okay.
And I think they're a little bit better.
Right now they have three more wins. Last week they were tied.
I understand that, but I'm saying
in a week from today they could be tied again, or the Mets could have three more wins.
I grant you that. Sure. I also think that the Padres are a little more talented.
Okay, but we'll find out.
I agree.
I would have thought so too, but the Padres have cratered. Since the trade deadline, the Padres have not been playing well. The Padres are supposed to go win that division too and go out there with the Dodgers. And by the way, the Dodgers themselves have cratered. The Dodgers have 80 wins. The big bad Dodgers we thought were unbeatable, going to win 110 games. They have 80 wins.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a team like the Dodgers, though, just... I don't think they take the regular season that seriously.
Okay.
That's a team I've got to give the benefit of. Now, they probably should have won another World Series more so than they have.
Right.
But, come on, champions a year ago.
Understood.
They do
I'm
this
just saying.
Every year. They rip off 100 and something wins. Like, they're a different level of evaluation for me.
Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, sometimes they go out in the postseason with 100 wins. Maybe they get in the postseason with 90 wins this year, and they have success. I have no idea. But all I'm saying is I'm not scared of the Dodgers. Dodgers don't look unbeatable to me, and I'll take my chances in a short series. Maybe the Mets, who have played up to their opponent, maybe they have been waiting to get to the postseason. I don't know. That's not right, but who's to say?
And like I said, I gave you the legit reasons before. It's not about everybody else. I still think they have some pieces in place here. And you look at the American League, Yankees right now, you could argue are clearly the best team in the American League. Even with Toronto being in front of them by two games, we'll see what happens. Yanks back in action, obviously, tonight against the Tigers, a playoff team. So the Yanks continue their stretch against these good teams. Took 2 out of 3 from the Stros, took 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays. Tigers up next. That'll be 3 straight division winners that the Yanks get here if they win these 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I'm getting a little antsy. If I'm not careful, I might click enter here and actually jump into this during the segment. I'm looking at these worlds here. I feel good about the Yankees. Not great, not great. But I'm feeling good about the Yankees, better than I felt in a while. Listen, they had to beat some good teams. And to beat the Astros with that dope umpire, first night behind the plate, the other night at third base, he was a mess. They win 2 out of 3. And then the previous series was a big one. You had to show that you could beat Toronto. So it's a smaller sample. But, you know, the Yankees do have good pitching. Bellinger's been really good. Wells' bat starting to wake up. But, man, I am so curious what they're going to do these big games with Volpe. I mean, do they keep running him? I don't know they're going to run him out there. I don't know that they will.
He can't throw the ball. Everything he's fielding, he's going backwards on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that to me, forget about his offense, which is one thing. The defense to me is just, there's no way you could let, you cannot have Anthony Volpe playing defense in the postseason. You want to do these games the regular season, try to get him right, maybe. There's nothing to me that would convince me that he's going to do anything that would warrant starting him in the playoffs.
I watched a video. This is like next level dimension geekville, I admit it, but I would say somebody try to find this. I don't even know who had it, but there was a slow video breaking down why he's having trouble throwing the ball. And basically, the person, the author, if you will, tied it to his upper extremity where he rotates so much to get a little extra zip on the ball because he does have a weak arm, as we know, that it's led to all these other mechanical flaws, and it takes an extra beat to obviously get that torso turned so that the runners are getting more steps. So as he's turning to get more juice on the ball, there's a little more time for these guys to get down the line. Then he's got to rush it. Then he spikes it in the dirt.
Yeah,
it was not a very encouraging video.
Too many times he's done that. All right, BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get back to the phones. 888-808-1019, the number to call. DJ is calling from East Brunswick. What's up, DJ?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Good.
What's up, bud?
All right, I just want to agree with you guys on 2 points and then make my final points for the Giants. BT, you're absolutely right. 20 years, this O-line has been absolutely garbage. Besides 1 year where it managed to make the playoffs. Sal, you know, this is definitely on Shannon Dable. If nothing prospers from this, you know, if Jackson's not good or he doesn't even see the field this year, they got to go. And other teams around the league that have worse histories than the Giants are seeing what their young quarterbacks have. Tennessee, Minnesota. The guy needs to have experience against competition to see if he's going to get better and prosper from underneath Dable or any other coach that they bring in. He has to start now. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You got it, buddy. Thank
you. DJ, I just would worry about, I'm not opposed. Look, I want to see him just like everybody else. I also want to see him succeed, so I want to make sure he's in the best spot to succeed. Minnesota is not a good example because they have been a great team for a while here. They have the foundation. They've had Sam Darnold succeed last year. Good God. The Giants screwed up Daniel Jones. The owner said it himself. They screwed him up every which way they could. And even when they had success the 1 year with Brian Daboll and Shane, we were thinking it was the way out. They went back the other way. And then he has great success in week 1 with the Colts. You heard Baldy tell us that it was the scheme and the way that the Colts have set up Daniel Jones to making the right throws and right reads and all that stuff. Why would I think then that this system is going to have Jackson Dart succeeding?
Listen, maybe Devil's not that good.
Well,
maybe he's not that good.
And here's what's going to happen. They're eventually, whether it's week 3, 5, 10, whatever, eventually they're going to go to Jackson Dart. Probably sooner than later. We agree with that?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be the full evaluation. It's going to be a love fest for Jackson Dart regardless. And it's going to be the full final evaluation of Brian Daboll. If Jackson Dart does not look good, really good, everybody's going to want Daboll out of town. They're going to end up firing probably at least Dable and maybe Shane and Dable. And then you're going to have a new coach come in, which is the exact thing we wanted to avoid. He's going to have Jackson Dart.
Yep.
And then that evaluation begins, new coach with Jackson Dart, and so on.
Well, because it just seems like we're going to get to that point in all probability.
It seemed like that a year ago. It seemed like we were going to get there.
It did, but it's even worse now. It's more complicated now because one or two, let's just say for a moment, Dable's not here next year, right? I don't know about Shane, but let's say they get a new coach. Well, one or two things going to happen. You get a coach, you look for a coach who loves Dart, which means the pool has less depth of potential head coach candidates because there might be a terrific coach out there that doesn't like Dart. But since Dart's in the building, you're not going to hire that guy who doesn't like Dart. So that's already limiting the pool of potentially good coaches. Or you say, okay, you know what? We're just going to do something that might not be a great fit and get a guy who likes Dart but doesn't love him, but we like him as a coach. And that's not a perfect fit.
The only way out of this is there's one last thing to say.
Here's the bottom. Dart's got to be a stud. That's how everybody gets a lifeline.
Bingo. Dart comes in, changes the offense. The Giants actually score touchdowns. Can you imagine that? Jackson Dart comes in. They score touchdowns even with this offensive line, even without Andrew Thomas, even with these same receivers. They score touchdowns. Then you make the case of, okay, Shane and Dable got it right. There's potential, even if it doesn't result in wins right away, you'll know, regardless of the result of the win losses, you'll know whether Dart's got it or not. And if he does show that, then Shane and Dable can remain here, and you hope to build a winner around Jackson Dart. But we're going to find out this year definitively one way or another.
All right, let me ask you this here. So I just pulled this up because I'm still on FanDuel. Right now, wow. Now there's different odds. Well, this is really, I haven't gone too into the weeds in this and actually placing these bets. I might have to. So right now, the over under for the Giants under 3.5 wins is at plus 280. Would you bet over or would you go the under and take the 280?
I would go over that.
You would?
3.5 wins?
Yeah. I mean, they're already 0-1, and the schedule's brutal.
I understand.
And the odds are phenomenal, plus 280.
Yeah, dude.
Maybe just don't touch it.
If anything, I would go over 3.5. But 3.5 is what? Minus what?
Over 3.5 is minus 340.
Yeah, so
I am not laying 340 to win 100 bucks.
What's over 4.5?
They don't go that far.
Okay.
It goes 1.5, 2.
That's why those things. I mean, you don't think the Giants are going to lose, win three games this year.
I don't, but in terms of value, which is different from forecasting, from a betting perspective, plus 280 to be under 3.5 right now seems pretty appealing. Giants look like they stink again on offense.
Call of the day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's call of the day brought to you by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts.
Greg is in Queens. What's up, Greg?
Hey, good morning, guys. Three quick points. Number one, where would the Mets be without Pete Alonso this year that David Stearns did not want to sign? Number two, the Phillies will sweep the Mets the next two games, and you guys are going to have a lot to talk about.
Well, they can't sweep them the next two games.
Why not?
It's a four-game series.
Okay, sweep them the next four.
They already got one.
Well, I'm just saying, I think the Phillies are going to just wipe them out in this series. And number three, David Stearns, what has he done for this club since he's been here? He didn't want to sign Alonso. He didn't get involved with Juan Soto. Look at the trade deadline. And I bring up this analogy, and I don't want to talk about the Yankees, but weeks ago everybody's talking about Boone and Cashman, and nobody's talking about David Stearns. What's going on here?
Well, there you have it. Call of the day. We talked a lot of Mets so far. In case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. I do want to mention Aaron Boone for a second here, BT. He's on with Talking Yanks podcast in his weekly spot. Yep. And they were pressing him pretty good on Volpe and the idea of having him sit more. And Boone did not defiantly shoot that down. As you could tell, because Kyle Beyer isn't getting more playing time. Mm-hmm. But the way that I took it is that he said flat out that he expects Caballero to get a start in this series, maybe even next series. I think
at short or in the outfield?
No, at short.
Okay, go ahead.
That's the way that they
played some outfield.
Yeah, no, because they were talking about Volpe. He said he liked the guys are suggesting that they sit Volpe for a while and have Caballero take over at short, which might be inevitable in the postseason anyway. And Boone saying, well, he likes Caballero's versatility off the bench, doesn't need to see him out there for a prolonged stretch. He knows he can handle it. I do think, and the guys even brought this example up, Jake and John Boy, talking about how with IKF, remember, shoved down our throat, and then all of a sudden he wasn't in the postseason. I think that's what's going to happen here. I mean, to me, the writing's on the wall. It's clear as day. The Yankees aren't stupid. They went as long as they could, giving Volpe every chance that they possibly could.
Yeah.
To a point where we're all like, dude, what the hell's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they should have acknowledged it earlier, wouldn't have got this loud or this bad. There's no way Volpe could stand at shortstop in the postseason.
I don't disagree. He's got a little more runway. You know, if he plays tonight and he has a good game, Probably running back out there tomorrow. If he could get a little hot, that could change things a little bit.
Don't you think the lineup's already set like a week out?
No, not for a week. Oh, come on. You're an ass.
No, I'm saying, you know, Booney. No way. You know, Booney, he's probably got, like he said to the guys, like, yeah, you know, he'll probably get a start this series and next series. In my mind, I'm thinking, dude, who are you fooling? You've already got the lineup scheduled out the rest of the season here.
Well, we did see the Yankees bench him after he had a three-hit night.
That's what I'm saying.
Which kind of, you know, but no, I don't think it's out for a month, for a week or so. I do think that there's obviously some future planning based on the immediacy of the pitching matchups, lefty-righty split, stuff like that. But, I mean, I think it's fluid, man. I think it's as simple as if Volpe wakes up and starts playing, he plays. If he doesn't, he sits.
All right, Dave is calling from Smithtown about the Mets. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Sal, listen, as a Mets fan, brain on October, baby. Phillies, Dodgers, Blue Jays, and Red Sox, after they beat the Yankees, I'm ready for it. But listen, Sal, I know a lot of calls have been giving you hell about your positivity, but let me say this. And look, if you struggle all year and you get in, whatever happens, happens. I can deal with that. And it's not about, you know, the Mets not winning in the World Series in 40 years. But here's the thing that ticks me off as a fan. You know, you go back to 3 years ago. The Jets are 7-4. They spit the bit. What was the rest of the games? The Rangers win a President's Trophy, get bowed out early, miss the playoffs the next year. The Mets have a big division lead like they had in 07, fall apart. That's the thing that's really frustrating to me as a sports fan. Right now I'm excited, but I just don't understand why these mental breakdowns happen. I just want your opinion on that.
I don't know if thank you for the call, Dave. I don't know if it's a mental break. First of all, you guys are the ones who are having the mental breakdown. The Mets are still in the playoffs. They were in the playoffs the whole year. And you're calling worried about it not happening. That's the mental breakdown. They either just don't have the right guys together. They don't have good enough players. Like, we'll find out at the end result right now. And this is what's frustrating to me, where it's like, all of a sudden, can you imagine I'm being painted as the picture of positivity? No, I'm being realistic. They are in the playoffs. They have maintained a playoff spot the entire year. So how is that being positive? We'll find out sooner than later about what this team's really made of, and then we can assess and judge them.
Okay, so a lot of this is piecing things together, admittedly. Opinions mostly derived from what we've seen so far that lead us to another opinion on what the Mets will do the rest of the year. But the one thing, let me just point out a baseball thing, which is why I'm a little worried for the Mets here. Because, now I said it, but we all said it. You got to get a stick. I remember saying, like, in May, like, dude, center fielder, it just, you need a center fielder. They got one. He's not good. So the issue that they had at the lower third of their batting order, we thought it was addressed to an extent with Mullins, but it has not been. And that was a big problem that I saw and talked about in real time that I thought they addressed enough where it was. And then Vientos was starting to hit. I'm like, okay, here we go.
Alvarez,
you know, up Mauricio. And down. Although that at bat yesterday was awful. Sure.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Those guys, they either have it or they don't. Like,
yeah.
Vientos has been inconsistent. Alvarez gave an at bat last night that looked like he belonged back in the minor leagues.
I think it was the worst at bat I've seen this year. He missed three pitches by a combined 9 feet. He was just guessing.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.